Hi, this is Chad Hickey, CEO of Lucky Forks, and you're listening to The New Voice of the Employee, Four Steps to Finding Your Social Good. Today we're going to be talking to Mohit Singla, the Director of Philanthropy for Fluent, Tim Price, the SVP of Sales at Yieldmo, and then Abby Hamilton, the Global HR and Recruitment Lead at LiveIntent. You're going to hear different perspectives of how to execute a plan, and what's interesting about this group is you're going to hear from an HR person, a person that owns CSR, and then a person running sales that are all dealing with a plan at different stages of how they're leaning into social good. In our first two episodes, we talked about finding the right fit for the company. In the second episode, we talked about designing the right social impact plan. And I want to talk to you guys about executing the right plan, right? So when I say, how do you execute a culture of service, what does that mean to you?
Well, a lot of our culture of service really goes around the members of the organization feeling a connection to serving the community. So while they're still building a strong connections inside the office on projects and things that teams are working on, they're also adding that extra element of making that connection outside the office while serving the community. And that kind of adds value to the relationships that are being built, especially when, you know, they're outside the office.
Got it. Anything that Tim, you or Abby would add?
Yeah, I mean, I think we take a similar approach. I mean, one of the big things we look for is, you know, understanding what motivates our employees outside of the office. And then we do take opportunities to actually allow them to bring it in-house.
Got it. Abby, anything right. That you guys are doing?
Yeah, I think for us, it's about putting our customers and ourselves first, right? We go as far as one of our core values is put people first. And so we are reiterating that in our day-to-day activities with our customers, but also our employees and how we're developing them and their talents.
So talk a little bit more in detail about people first and like what are the things like specifically that you've done that you've seen work really well that other organizations could also execute?
Yeah, I'll go down the career progression standpoint because it's one that I'm most proud of, that we've made a lot of progress there in the last 12 months. So with career progression for our employees, it's been a focus and a large motivator for us, both in building skills in their current role, as well as what's next for them. In measuring those results this year for our current employees, so population as of today, 26% of them have either been promoted or have moved roles in 2019.
Interesting. Okay, great. What about you guys? Is the career progression something that is important from that perspective in your culture?
I'm gonna take notes on that and actually start working with that. I think we focused more upon the fact that we have like engineering and sales, and really we've embraced diversity actually as sort of a core piece of this. I think when you look at the organizations 10 years ago, you know, sort of the profile of the employee was very linear, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that as we've incorporated tech and more different devices and stuff that are actually being used for our core services, we see different, you know, cultures, colors, shapes, forms, et cetera. And so what we're spending a lot of time with is actually understanding what does that mean as you create more of a homogenized culture within the organization? And what are the little things that are going to make somebody click that wouldn't necessarily be obvious in, you know, the traditional, like, you know, digital 1.0. For us, we've spent a lot of time there embracing that, understanding that, and taking the feedback from the bottom up to really think about what's going to motivate in and outside of the office, you know, people that want to be part of what we're trying to do.
Got it. And so when you say, you know, service, social good, where does that play into the overall culture? Like, how does that impact in importance of the overall plan that you guys have?
Well, I think that the overall kind of how corporate culture it plays into it is really that it's very important, and that, you know, the services that we're offering to our staff base are activities that are not only a big part of our culture, but also a lot of the reasons our employees feel like that extra connection to the organization more than just the business functions that are there. Connecting to do good in the community really strengthens those bonds that we're already establishing as doing business functions already day to day. This is now the extra layer on top of that that adds to the culture.
Got it. Anything that Tim, you or Abby would?
Yeah, well, it's funny because a lot of the policies that we're putting together are not even just policies, but just the way that we think about the org. If you think about it, you're most passionate when you're like hosting a dinner with family and friends, and so we're trying to watch when we're, you know, out and about and doing these things to see how our employees are passionate and how maybe they're approaching something that they're doing outside that we could actually replicate and bring internally and essentially productize and sort of, you know, stretch out. So I think it's been very interesting to see some of our people get very excited, you know, about a particular cause that they're trying to get behind. And when you watch how they dig into it, you know, sometimes you can see the difference between, hey, that's not the same person I see at the office, but gee, wouldn't it be great if I could get that personality replicated in here. And so we will take the time to dig in and be like, hey, I noticed you doing this, or I noticed you really get a bunch of people behind you getting really, you know, activated and excited about that. You know, tell me more about that. How can we do that here? And when it comes from within and when it comes from a passion point, and when you're sitting at the executive level, you know, kind of look, you know, trying to think about it from the employee level, and they're having a say in how they structure the org, you just tend to get like results that are, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5x of what you would get if you just try to deploy something from like a, you know, a book from Barnes & Noble.
Got it.
There's a collaboration there.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. It's real. And I think that leads to a really great point, Tim, that it has to be organic as well and natural and foster those passions. Because when people do that, they will bring their best selves to work. And so a great example of how we've done that is we created something called the Culture Squad. Okay. That was different levels across the organization, different tenures, et cetera, and let them drive what we're doing next. What are fun things we bring? What are volunteer activities? What are you passionate about? And how do we bring that into our day-to-day work? And then that helped create our diversity and inclusion group that we call BID, which stands for Belonging, Inclusion, and Diversity. And they've created subgroups, and it really became this grassroots initiative that people have been very passionate about, and they're driving to the next level.
And as you've executed these sort of plans, how, you know, obviously people come into the organization all the time that may be new employees that may have different passions. How are you guys kind of making sure that you look at the evaluation of how you do social good in community and then make sure that you're still speaking to every employee?
I think that's by opening it up and asking, right? And allowing them to be a part of that group from day one and allow their voice to be heard. Because also if you're socializing that before you come in, people are going to make a move because they feel something, right? Mm-hmm. Not just because what we do is cool, although I do think it's cool. But it's how do they see themselves fitting into the organization? By offering these different programs, they may be more likely to see something that fits for them. Down to, we also have something called Women with Intent to play with Live Intent. And how do women fit into our groups, and women in leadership, especially? It's hard in the advertising space to be a woman in the more senior level ranks. So how are we fostering that talent, developing that talent, and supporting people as they move through different phases of their life and their careers?
How does it stay living and breathing within your culture, though, right? So, I mean, obviously you have these organizations. Some of you have talked about you have groups that you've formed. I mean, do you empower those groups then to take that and make a consistent initiative? Or is it a situation where, you know, you're still kind of working through that in that consistency? Because we've, you know, talked to other people where they'll say, look, we're in the infancy stage and that's totally okay and we're figuring this out. But talk to me a little bit about how this consistently lives and breathes within your culture and with what you do on a daily basis.
Well, I would piggyback on what Abby was saying, that giving the members of the organization a voice and that they feel that their causes near and dear to them are being heard by those that are around them every day, and allowing those different programs to kind of be fostered throughout the organization, that when you have the corporate support behind it, whether it's with a corporate match or even us having The ability to put on an event with, you know, AV refreshments, all that, things that kind of make it a proper event and get people excited and involved about whatever the cause may be. I'm simply excited about a cause just because my near and dear coworker is excited about that cause or has some special connection to it. So by offering the match that the corporation can give to any fundraising around an initiative that is brought by an employee really allows them to feel like they're being heard and that they have the support behind them.
So you're seeing people leverage diverse backgrounds of what they care about socially and then influencing each other so that that starts to expand within the organization.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the coolest parts about it is that it sort of is like a domino effect. Like once we got behind one particular cause, you know, and we were getting behind another person, that person go, hey, maybe I can have a seat at the table there. Well, they immediately go to the people who are already supported and they get the counter support. And you have this really beautiful effect where like people get together and start doing something differently. And what's nice about that is that you also have different lenses now on somebody who's passionate about something also taking in a different lens from their experience, potentially with different nonprofits or different, you know, for care stuff. And we're seeing some really cool stuff come out of that. So I'm really excited to see what like 2020, 2021 looks like and how our people team and our growth team actually starts, you know, bringing that into really even the hiring and just ongoing process, you know, moving forward.
How does this become, you know, to your point, Tim, talking about, you know, 2020, 2021, a lot of people are still trying to figure it out. And I think they're very transparent about that. They'll say, hey, yes, we even have it named and branded and everything, but we're still figuring out what's going to resonate and how we're going to take this into the future. How are you guys looking at that evolution of your culture and how you take the plans further in future years?
I think it's continuing to try things and knowing that some of these things will fizzle out with time. And that's okay because new things will rise in their midst. So we're talking a lot about who's leading them and such. And I think it's important to have executive sponsors and your people team sponsors, but they're not the leaders of these initiatives. It's your next level of leaders. It's the people that are up and coming. And it's amazing to see what's coming out of those people when you allow them to tap into their passions. And a point was brought up earlier about really how that transfers into the rest of their day-to-day work. And while it is more work from a day-to-day perspective, you actually get more out of that person because they're engaged. And a highly engaged person is going to bring more effort, discretionary effort, on a day-to-day basis. And that's invaluable to a business.
So where are you seeing the employee engagement after you've executed your plan? Because I think that, you know, a lot of people assume, oh, well, you know, this person just cares about giving back to community, when the reality is that there can be a lot of other motives, right? People can say, this allows me to spend time with executives, so there's some sort of career pathing. I just like the social aspect of getting to know my employees more. So there are ways that this can expand outside of just social good. What are some of those trends that you guys are seeing? Do you think that's a fair statement, or are you seeing one be more predominant than the other? Mo, do you want to?
No, I think that's definitely a fair statement, and also that maybe the proportion of where the interest lies may vary from company to company. But the point is that there are the multiple facets of, you know, why a particular member of an organization would want to participate in these kind of events, whether it's, like you said, to get more face time with someone that they don't normally deal with on day to day, especially at an executive level. And then on top of that, that they feel that they're doing good, you know, for the community. So those trends sort of move in the direction of involvement and both socially and also for their own career advancement. And when they feel like they're doing it for a specific good and something that they may even be personally affected by, it makes them that much more engaged. And you certainly get more out of an engaged person, for sure.
Have you found that it connects your employees from the perspective of, you say, I care about this cause and you do, and so in some way you're able to connect on a personal level that's a little different than, hey, I watched this Bravo show.
Absolutely.
I think Mo nailed it.
I mean, I think one of the funny parts out there is that, you know, maybe it's just me, but it's like, you know, you have a title, you know, and you never realized really how intimidating that can be as the culture grows. Mm-hmm. And so having access to the C-suite, having access to the E-suite,
in the past typically has been sort of like this very like, you know, ivory tower kind of thing. And so to your point exactly is like, hey, look, Tim's really interested in mental illness and wow, you know, like I also suffer. And gee, by the way, I'm not going to have a hard time talking about this topic that potentially has a lot of stigma behind it. I can go talk to an EVP or to a C-suite, or I can talk to somebody about that, kind of expose my feelings to them. And I've had that experience personally. And, you know, granted, people know me from LIPF on the side, but it was really comforting to know that I'm having a younger generation, the next generation of what our business looks like, you know, coming to me and talking to me more adamantly and more openly about something, knowing that, and I think the key here is that they can't go in with it with a set of fear, right? If they're going in and saying, hey, is this going to affect my day-to-day job, you know, going forward? It's like, this is sort of a chasm that we're going to have to actually start crossing between like where the boundaries are of having these conversations. But when I'm having very candid conversations with people, I'm like, hey, great, I understand. Like, I've been there before. And all of a sudden you see that person's giving a little extra, asking a little bit different question. There's more compassion. There's more empathy in what they do in the job, off the job, to their coworkers, et cetera. And there's also more sensitivities around it too, as more and more people talk about more sensitive topics, which I think actually is part of more of our, you know, social conversation right now anyway.
Yeah, and LIPF is your own foundation, Life is Priceless, correct?
That's right, yeah. So we started Life is Priceless Foundation after I lost my brother to suicide, you know, about 9 years ago. And he was also in the digital media business. And, you know, coming from that experience, it was extremely tough. I thought I was going to toast my career talking about mental health and suicide.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think I was going to have a job in advertising. And, you know, to my, you know, surprise, I was actually supported by most of the digital community, and we've done some really great stuff.
Well, and now the stigma of having that conversation is becoming less of a stigma, you know?
Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, I think, you know, and the problem hasn't mitigated, it's just morphed, you know?
Yeah. I think it's interesting what you say about the, you know, having that sort of experience and the titles, you know, if I'm paraphrasing correctly, not really meaning as much, or there being this kind of guard that's let down because, you know, I'll give a shout out to the Home Depot Foundation. You know, when I was running a sales team, we would participate in their events that they would do, and you would be working alongside the CMO and the head of media and all these people that I think in a business setting can somewhat be, you know, maybe intimidating, or you see them as some sort of senior, but because you're kind of in this different mindset of helping an organization, and in this case we were building benches for homeless veterans, there is a, you do connect on a different level. And so I think that, you know, to your point, I completely agree about those sort of things.
Yeah, I think it just gives people an opportunity to look at the person versus
the human
job. Yeah, the actual human element of it. And quite frankly, I mean, from the top to the bottom, you know, everybody has a passion point, everybody has something that they're into. You know, let's open our eyes, let's embrace that, and let's sort of like curate that and try to make that part of, you know, what our corporate culture should look like from now on.
And how do you, I mean, how do you though, you know, when you're, all these things sound really great, but then you have, sometimes we get busy, we're all busy, you know, especially people building a company, you're trying to keep your head above water and keep moving, right? How do you, you know, to the executive that's listening to this kind of rolling their eyes like, oh yeah, I wish, you know, what do you, you know, I wish I had time to do that. What do you say to that from your own experiences, Mo?
I think it's valuable and gives a great ROI if a company can dedicate a job role to someone that can make this their day-to-day function for supporting all these other initiatives that is someone's day-to-day that they can do.
And you, yeah. From your perspective, you say that because you're the director of philanthropy.
That,
yeah,
yes,
you are that
exactly.
Person. So talk, you know, explain how you all said, okay, this is valuable enough to actually have the cost to do this because the ROI is so much greater than the cost of the company. How did you kind of come to that?
So take a step back. This had always been an extracurricular part of my job roles at Fluent, and that throughout the years I've taken on whatever job I had, but the philanthropy portion was always extracurricular. It was always, you know, after hours or separate time. And that having it get so much value out of it as an extracurricular really springboarded it into, hey, let's make this a full-time thing. And also because we are able to, there is enough work to be done that, you know, it should be someone's job. And then on the ROI side, it really allows us to be looked at as one of a sought after place to work in tech in New York City when we have a robust CSR program, corporate social responsibility. And that the value that we add with that program allows us to be a little bit selective with the talent that we're hiring when we have an influx of people that want to work for a company that is responsible in this way.
Yeah. I mean, I think that everyone has to be where they are, and, you know, everyone has a budget, and that's totally understandable. But I do think what's interesting, you know, most specifically about your role is, I think if you look at all the things that are happening around us, how much more important this is becoming, how different CEOs are making now public statements, having some sort of social stance is no longer a faux pas anymore, that this is a full-time job. Like, people do need to start thinking about, you are now having media organizations that are actually making this a whole division of their company.
Sure.
You know, and so it's respecting the fact that people are in certain parts of their phase of building out the strategy, but then also realizing where this is going. Would you say that that's fair, Abby? Like, from a longer term perspective of knowing that this will be something that is a constant thing within the organization?
I do. I agree 100% with that statement. It is in phases,
yeah,
though, right? Because you do need to take each step and prove the value to get to the point where a full-time person can be supported. But there are employees and their roles and their positions. But at the end of the day, we're humans and we're craving that connection and that bigger purpose in what we do from a day-to-day perspective. And by investing in that, you can show some ROI. And for us specifically at Live Intent, I think some of the ROI, or one of the biggest pieces of ROI we've seen, is the reduction in turnover. While we can't attribute it 100% to this, I do think it's had a significant impact, because if you look at the first half of 2019 versus the first half of 2018, our turnover decreased by 9%. And if you look at the savings to the business on that, there are tons of studies out there looking at, you know, cost of turnover, but one of the most simple ones is the estimate of 6 to 9 months of an employee's salary is the cost. So for an average $100,000 employee, say, for easy, clean math, you're looking at $50,000 to $75,000 in savings for the business per person that you're able to retain by putting some emphasis in these initiatives.
I completely agree. Like, there is a report out. It's called Project ROI. It's done from Babson College, and it talks about the effects of having a CSR program within your organization. The market value can go up to 6%. You can actually have revenue increase by up to 20%, and then you reduce turnover up to 50% in a lot of cases. Okay. And so it's really interesting that you bring that up, because, you know, we'll have conversations sometimes and they'll say, well, there isn't a budget, or we don't have the time or the money for this. And it's like, you are actually going to say, you don't have the time not to have the time, you know what I mean, in these sort of scenarios. Tim, would you say there are similar things being looked at from your perspective, and
yeah,
you've seen?
Yeah, I think, I mean, right now in our people department, I mean, we're thinking about that as a shared responsibility, but I mean, my answer fundamentally is, you know, show your CFO retention and lack of turnover. I mean, that enough will justify, hands down, that's all you have to say. Mm-hmm. If you do the math, it makes absolute sense. It's extremely hard to hire exceptionally good talent, and it's amazing, by curating something that they have a passion point around, how much more that impacts them than, say, a free lunch or a Netflix subscription, or, you know, some of these other perks that we see that are very superficial in nature. So for me, it's, you know, I walk up to my CFO and just be like, you know, to your point, $60,000 right there. Like, that's real money.
Yeah, I think that what I say is, you know, the free lunches, the things like that, that's kind of table stakes now. You're not a unique company, you know, by having those things anymore. And it's not the thing that keeps people there. It is this next evolution of the workforce, which we're talking about. So, excellent. So let's talk about, like, how do you set the predefined goals? Like, how are you looking at the expectations that you're setting for your organizational impact? You know, Abby, you've thrown out quite a few metrics that you all are able to tie back to the things that you're doing. Is that exceeding expectations? Is it meeting expectations? And how did you really kind of land on how you were going to approach those expectations?
We entered it not having expectations.
I didn't know.
So you're
overall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't know where this was going to go.
Right.
Right. We knew we needed to do something, and it could only help is what we hoped. And I think what we're seeing a year plus into these initiatives is that those thoughts were right. They were correct. And we're hoping that as we continue to write the playbook as we go, that these only increase and they get better. So this is just our benchmark. It's just our starting point.
Got it. Any other metrics? I mean,
not so much metrics, but even maybe a little intangible, but looking at the flip side of not having this kind of program, that it may put you in the wrong spot when you're trying to recruit talent, and this is now quickly becoming something that people expect and look for in a future employer, is do they have this kind of spot in the office that is handling these kind of initiatives?
Yeah, I completely agree. I always say it's all good until it's not.
Right.
You know
sure,
what I mean?
Exactly,
and then it's like you're scrambling to try to make things right. So let's talk about experiences and events. And I think that, you know, as we have conversations, experiences and events and social good obviously need to happen and are a key component, because I think when you're making social impact, you want to feel that, you want to see that, you want to touch that, right? So I think that those are important things. However, I do think it's important for people to understand that by having one or two volunteer experiences a year is not really a social impact strategy, as we were talking about earlier, of something living and breathing within your culture on a daily basis. So let's talk about that. Like, what experiences have you seen that you have executed, knowing that they are necessary, that have worked really well? Mo, I know that you guys just had your annual golf event, so why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we had the golf outing, and wildly successful. It was a great day, and more so than just our annual volunteer day or twice a year volunteer day, this is another, let's call it a volunteer initiative for those, I had about 25 of our staff that volunteered for the day to handle things that needed to be done, but now they're volunteering in a venue that is loaded with our clients and our partners. And now, while they're sort of helping the day move along smoothly, they're also rubbing elbows with some of the top executives in our field. And also back to Volunteer Day itself, I had wanted to make sure that it wasn't just a one-off, two-off thing a year, that rather I encouraged those that went to do their volunteer assignment that we had set up for them to look into possibly creating an individual commitment with that organization to carry on their own volunteer effort throughout the year as a subsidiary of their Fluent employee and being part of that organization, let's say North Shore Animal League, for example, out on Long Island. We had a few people sent over there to volunteer for the day, and a couple of them, as I encouraged, to have continued their commitment. Now, two weekends a month or two Saturdays a month, they're able to put in their hours helping the animals, and that was kind of a springboard from our volunteer day. So it's more about giving them the venue and the encouragement to continue that commitment rather than it just being a 1 or 2 day a year assignment.
So creating those micro experiences,
sure,
where two or three people can go and do it at their leisure on their own time.
Right, and that was just the one location. Among the other 15 that we had run for the day, all of the people that participated are encouraged to continue that commitment on their own.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. What about you guys? What are you seeing work well?
I mean, you know, again, I think we're still in our infancy. I think there was two things that we were kind of playing around with. In late September, we're going to do our first like shot at this, you know, in a different way. We're bringing the entire company together and trying like sort of a 3 day collective offsite onsite that's going to try to get everybody together. Agenda TBD, you know, we're still working it out. I mean, the big piece, like I can't, repeat this enough, and I think everybody in the room would agree, is it's coming from the bottom up. So we're trying to curate and figure out where the LCD is that's going to make that bubble up.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because we're seeing that trend happen ourselves within Lucky Forks, is that you're seeing companies or sales organizations, when they have their annual conferences, instead of doing, you know, an activity that may have been a little bit, I don't want to say frivolous, but not necessarily centered around social good, that is what they're looking for now. It's like, how do we have a volunteer day? Do we do something that actually gets us into the community? And I think that, you know, what we're seeing is that people get behind whatever their corporate mission is and
sure,
what aligns with that. rather than, to your point, the challenge of kind of making everyone happy within the organization that may have different passion points. It becomes about what is the corporate passion, right? What is our corporate values and who have we chosen to align with that? So I think that's interesting. What about you, Abby? Anything?
Yeah, so we do the annual offsite still, and Live Intent being 10 years old, that's a critical thing that we do that every year. And this spring in our offsite, we dedicated a half of a day to giving back. And the team chose Meals on Wheels, given just the volume of people that could participate. And everyone was encouraged, but it wasn't mandatory to participate. We chose it based on a team came up with some ideas, and then we allowed people to vote and choose what would be best. Another one we do that I really enjoy is we have a company band. And they're called Riff. And
like an actual band?
A legitimate band.
Are you like the tambourine player? Like what's...
You don't want to see my musical
Thursday,
talent.
If I'm not mistaken.
They're playing tomorrow.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where do you play?
Yeah, they're run out of club.
No, they're really big in Helsinki.
Yeah. Ah.
Yeah.
In Helsinki, is that what you just said? Yeah. Look at me, I was like, where's that? No, anyway, yeah.
They're actually playing tomorrow. I can send you details.
Okay, amazing.
So Riff plays events, and every show they play, we do some kind of giving back for the show. It's donation to enter, and all donations go to philanthropy of choice. So for the show that we're doing tomorrow, or the band is doing tomorrow, we're giving to the Trevor Project. And so we're allowed to, we open it up for solicitations of things that are important to people. And given Gay Pride Month, the Trevor Project came up, and it was something the whole company got behind. And so all proceeds of tomorrow's Riff show will go to the Trevor Project.
Excellent. So is that basically how you gauge the highest employee engagement, is through some sort of survey, letting the employees vote? Is there anything outside of that you've seen work, outside of just some sort of feedback loop?
Actually, we're fortunate enough to have Fluent provide a coffee lounge in our office, which is great.
It's very nice.
We have our barista there making anything you'd like. I'm a black coffee man, so it's not really for me, but... the great thing about it is we have what looks like a tip jar at that coffee shop, but what it actually is, and there's little posted signage near it, it is a sort of a flavor of the month, donate to this cause for this month for the thing. So October will be a breast cancer, and in June we had Ale Fournay Center for Pride Month. And a lot of these initiatives, whether they may be monthly based or themed, they are still like participated in by everyone, whether you're, you know, dropping a dollar in there when you get your coffee or whatever. But it's a lot of it is creating that engagement around like a community, a lounge kind of a community setting. And that has certainly done well, and it helps.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's something so super simple.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of companies now that are coming out to really digitize that experience. There's a company called Dip Jar, which is basically where you can set your donation. You dip your credit card in like you would swipe at a retail store.
Very cool.
And then you make the donation that way. And so there's a lot of different, I think, ways of using technology to make those donations in a much more efficient way. So I think that's a great idea.
Absolutely. That's how ours started, too. Was just that the need was there, and a void was there that needed to be filled kind of by the employees. And also that, back to Tim's point, that how do you collaborate between the departments? And you nailed it also, saying find that LCD, right? Find that least common denominator that is there that can join other departments or other teams together for a common good or a common cause.
Because who doesn't want to do something good? I mean, without getting into the specific of what the cause is,
right.
I bet if you ask most people, unless you're a crazy person, you know what I mean? Like, you would say, would you want to do something that's positive for someone else?
Sure.
You know, I think most people would say, sure. You know, it just depends what the details are.
I agree with that, but most people don't have the time for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the cool parts about this is when you allow employees time at work to invest into something they're passionate about, they do better work to get to the thing they're most passionate about, right? Like, that's the cool part about it. When you're getting ready for something, or when you're like, have something you need to plan at work in your own lives, like you're gonna sit there, and while you're typing that email and you're doing your stuff, you're like, I'm really noodling on this. And you feel bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
When you tell the employee, I want you to work on this. Okay, great. And we're going to do this plus. And it's like, great. And plus. And then all of a sudden you see, like, again, you see that translation of that work process and the passion they put into the passion project starts kind of, you know, permeating through into their day-to-day. Like, productivity goes through the roof, the happiness, the culture, everything starts getting super, super better.
I
love that. Like, that to me is, like, brings, like, super joy to actually going to work every day.
I completely agree. I think it bonds you out of, I mean, I've experienced it myself in other companies where we were either volunteering, donating desks, doing the Home Depot Foundation event that I told you about, where you just connect on a different level. Like, to your point, the human level, where it's like, it's not about my title, your title, or what I'm trying to sell you, or whatever. It's that we're kind of in this together, building toward this objective. So
I think companies have said for years that they're going to put people first. Employees are actually demanding it now. Yeah. And in order to keep up, we have to. And we're finding that not only are we doing it to keep up, but it's working.
Yes. Well, in the Business Roundtable, you all saw the article from Business Roundtable about the 181 CEOs that literally came out, Tim Cook, Jeff Bezos, everyone that said, you know, it is not just about shareholder value. In fact, that's not the priority anymore. It is now about putting community. It's about putting our people, our clients first. That's the new way of doing business. And I think for those companies to kind of come in and say that is a game changer. I think it will get a lot of people's attention.
You end up with positive shareholder value just by doing that anyway at the end of the day.
It does so. Yeah. Right. Like, I think that people just get, all they see is the money initially going out the door for it.
Sure.
And it takes, you know, a minute to really start to make it tangible up to what right. you said. In a year, you've seen 9% decrease, I believe, right?
Yeah.
In, you know, people churning out of the company. So there you have the data.
The same way when I make a request at the end of the year for the following year with the finance department saying, hey, here's how much I'm budgeting out to possibly be giving away or fundraising or whatever for the following year, that I don't know, I feel bad, not bad, but I'm conscious of asking for a significant sum of money, but I also know in the back of my mind that it will come back a fewfold at the end of the day, both with employee retention and also with making us a better place to work, and then also, of course, the benefiting the community itself.
Yeah, no, ours started with a budget of zero.
Yeah.
It started with people. You know, just somebody raising their hand, hey, I'd like to really kind of get behind this. Well, how much more did it cost me to take the
some
soda
resource,
was already yeah. it was in the fridge, the yeah. space that we already had, the projector we already had, just open the doors for an extra couple hours.
Sure.
Like, that was the catalyst for it that got us to the point that said, hey, let's see what's happening
you
here.
You already have the venue.
Like, it was no cost. So, I mean, to anybody who's like in the leadership side of things, it's like, you don't have to write the budget first. You just have to find the passion point and the champions from within that wanted to do it. They basically, you know, shine the light that's going to, you know, show you the path that we want to go. That's how we got to where we got this year, and working with you and, you know, with other organizations, was people are getting really behind this. They're getting super stoked about this. You know, let's curate that, and let's, you know, maybe take a couple bucks off here that we weren't really getting any return from anyways, and just reallocate it. It wasn't more, it was move.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's a different way of thinking about it, and it's paying dividends.
Yep.
So far as we can tell.
Yeah. Awesome. This has been great. Thank you guys.
Thank you so much.
That was great.
Been listening to a podcast production of AW360, the year-round content destination from Advertising Week. Visit AW360 at 360.advertisingweek.com and be sure to check out the other AW360 podcasts now available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Producers on this podcast are Richard Larson and Jack Hirschman, with music provided by Audio Network. For more information on Advertising Week, the world's largest gathering of advertising, marketing, and technology leaders, now in 5 markets around the globe, visit www.advertisingweek.com.